On the inaugural episode of the History of the Chorus podcast with Curtis and Josh, we take a deep dive into the history of the band Norma Jean, part one. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at isurvivedbypro for news and new episode postings. And make sure to tell us what you think of the show by leaving us a review and a comment on whatever podcast service you're using. So without further ado, let's start the show.
The devil is in Atlanta. Army surrounded.
Welcome to the much anticipated first episode of the History of the Chorus podcast. I'm Curtis.
And I'm Josh.
Josh, we made it, man. We finally made it. We've been talking about trying to do a music podcast for the last year, maybe or so, year and a half, maybe. We finally settled on an idea. I just want the record stated that it was my idea first to do a music podcast. And then this guy decided to swoop in behind me and say, hey, no, let's do a music podcast. Oh, really? What a great idea. I wish I would have thought about that.
No, music podcast doesn't sound good. Yeah, hear me out. I'm thinking a podcast about music.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Yeah, so today we're finally kicking off the History of the Chorus podcast. We're kicking this podcast series off with a bang, Josh. We can only do it this way, man. We can only start with this band, I think. The one, the only, the almighty Norma Jean.
Yeah, it definitely felt like a great starter to this. So,
was that the first band you thought of when trying to think of which band to go first with?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's was the first was one that kind of came to me that I was like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I kept asking a couple of times, like, well, so who's it going to be? What are we going to talk about first or whatever? And in my mind, I kept thinking, say Norma Jean, say Norma Jean, say Norma Jean, say Norma Jean.
I wanted to go with
maybe I just willed it, you know?
Yeah. No, we wanted to go with somebody a little bit more accessible too, you know?
True.
I'd love for a first episode to be like a plea for purging or something, but also like probably about a third of the amount of people that know Norma Jean are going to know who that is.
Right. Exactly. Yep. All right, man, let's dive on in. You want to?
Let's do it. Dive okay, on man. In.
Let's dive on in. Well, I just want to start off by saying, the band's history here is, started from 1997 all the way to the present 2025. So this band's been going for 25 years, man. Can you believe that?
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. How old is Corey?
I think he's, I want to say he's in his 40s, dude. If he's not, he's like late 30s, but I think he's in his 40s.
Brutal.
Yeah. When was the first time, or what year was the first time you heard Norma Jean?
The first album, Bless the Martyr and Kiss the Child, that was the first one I heard, but I didn't hear that album until probably like 2004 or five, maybe.
Oh, okay. Okay. So cool. I think the first time I heard them was, I would say probably 06, cause I'm pretty sure Redeemer was my first album that I got to listen to, because I think you actually got that for Christmas one year, maybe with Bless the Martyr. And I just remember being like so mesmerized by the artwork of Redeemer and then like just listening to that album on repeat all the time.
It was fantastic
back in the day. Yeah, for sure. So the genres that Norma Jean is classified in would be metalcore, post-hardcore, mathcore, noise rock, and this one's a little different, but new metal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like mathcore is generous. That's generous.
Is it generous?
It's a little bit generous.
How so?
I don't know. I feel like that's taking away from a band like Fall of Troy, or I feel like you could even say that that might be generous to say that about Fall of Troy.
Fall of Troy.
More technical, you know.
We can get into the history of mathcore in another episode. we don't have time for that deep dive.
Most of those, most of those I agree with.
Yeah. The new metal though, we'll talk about that right now pretty quickly here, because it's only in the first part of Norma Jean. In fact, it's not even really technically part of Norma Jean. It's part of a band called Ludacris. Confused,
I would say,
with the rapper
Chris.
Ludacris. This is Ludacris. Yeah. So the band was formed in 1997 in Douglasville, Georgia. Shout out to anyone that is listening to this podcast currently in Douglasville, Georgia. If you are, let us know. Leave a comment. We would like to know where you're listening from. Formed in 1997 in Douglasville, Georgia. The first name was, again, Ludacris, not Ludacris, Ludacris. And the first official lineup consisted of Josh Scoggin on vocals, Christopher Day on guitar, Scotty Henry on guitar, Josh Swofford on bass, Daniel Davison on drums, and one Mick Bailey on turntables.
Everybody remembers Mick Bailey from Norma Jean.
Everybody. If you don't know Mick Bailey,
every hardcore Norma
Jean fan,
remember. Yeah, we'll remember Mick Bailey.
Yes. And I'd forgotten until I started doing the history here this last, week or two, I had forgotten that they had a turntable guy in like their very early years. And I think I proposed this question to you last week about, I wonder what Norma Jean now, like, still have all the same songs that they have now in their catalog. But if somebody would like go back, who's like a master of turntables, would go back and like put turntables in all those songs, I wonder how it would sound.
No, I told you it would sound like Here Comes the Kraken. Like it would sound something like that.
Oh man. All right. Anyway, so there's your first,
like, it's terrible
lineup.
But then there's also something about it that you're just like, damn, like,
this is mesmerizing, man. I can't like not listen. Yeah, for sure. So anyway, that's your first official lineup, six members. Soon to be a very revolving door of members though. And we will get to that as the members come and go here. So the first two albums, they're kind of mini albums, came out in 1999 and 2000 respectively. The first album that they put out was a split with a band called Travail from Pluto Records. And you know what? I just thought about this not too long ago. Unless I just like don't realize it. And maybe this was just like a big like 2000s trend, but like nobody does splits anymore, it seems like. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, I guess so. I've like not really thought about that, but
it used to be a big thing. Split EPs
used to be a big thing.
Yeah. Bring those back, guys. Would like to see that. anyway, so the split there with the band Travail from Pluto Records in 1999, and then their solo 5 EP came out in 2000 from Pluto Records also. Both these albums actually had the exact same track list, so they probably just basically copied and pasted from one album to the other. Those songs included Body of God, My Closet, Eeyore, that's Eeyore from Winnie and the Pooh, and Die of Fuego, whatever the heck that means, and I Covenant, I'm Yours. So the other thing I forgot to mention earlier was, and we're going to see that in, obviously we see it right now in some of these song names, I wouldn't classify them as a Christian rock band, but they're a band with some Christian members in it. Maybe not so much now, but at one time, especially then, they were all, in the belief system of Christianity, and their songs definitely showed it. These two albums definitely have a much different sound than the Norma Jean that we're used to now, especially with this newest album coming out just the other day. But that goes with the whole turntable thing. This is actually the only two albums that have turntables actually present on them, as the turntable master Mick Bailey would leave before the next album would come out. We'll get to that here in a second, though. But we talked about last week again the whole turntable thing, and I think you said something about you thought maybe they were going for the whole Linkin Park sound, which Linkin Park was kind of getting big right about that time, weren't they?
What year did you say?
1999 and 2000 is when these two came out.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. So anyway, interesting. Have you heard either one of those albums before?
No.
Okay. Have you, that's what I want to ask too. Have you listened to any Ludacris albums?
I've listened to plenty of Ludacris. I have not listened to any Ludacris.
Okay. Okay. I would say skip these first two albums. The next one, their full length album, I've listened to a couple of times and it's good. You know, it's definitely trending towards Bless the Martyr for sure. We'll get to that here in a second though. But, like I said, there's going to be a, super, not maybe not a super, but a revolving door of band member changes throughout the 25 years of their history. And we're already starting to see that as founding member Josh Swofford, who plays bass, would exit the band soon after their 5 EP was released.
Poor Swoff.
Couldn't do it. I think it was the turntables. I think he was like, if we're going in this direction, I just can't do it. And the sad thing is if he would have stuck around, he would have realized they were going to ditch the turntables, but I don't think that's why he left. But anyway, so Josh Swofford leaves the band. He is soon replaced by one Josh Doolittle on bass. So this next album comes out in 2001. It's their first full-length album, and it's actually their only full-length album under the name Ludacris, not Ludacris. It's called Throwing Myself, and their first off of Solid State Records. Again, like I said earlier, Mick Bailey is actually going to be leaving the band during the recording, so there's actually no turntables present, thank God. This is going to be the first album with new bassist Josh Doolittle. This album was actually met with favorable reviews. Definitely not one of their best albums, but you can tell they're making progress. Like I said, this after listening to this album, you can tell they're making their way towards Bless the Martyr and what made that album really good. Songs off of this album include Light Blue Collar, Local 1145, Patient Philadelphia, and An Act of My Own Volition. If you haven't listened to this album, Josh, you're one of those people, I would recommend at least giving it a shot.
I haven't listened to that one either.
Yeah, Throwing Myself is the album name. Soon after, the band decided to change their name because one Ludacris started becoming very popular. So to try to get themselves away from that name, they decided to go with a new name that they'd kind of been kicking around for a while called, you guessed it, Norma Jean. And according to the drummer Daniel Davison, the meaning of Norma Jean put together means patterns of grace and mercy, which to them felt right because it's trending towards their Christian beliefs. So they decided to stick with that. Yet again, man, I miss these splits. I wish they would bring back split albums because in 2002, Norma Jean would release their first technical album, which is a split with Me Without You from Solid State Records. Have you heard that one?
I think so. Yeah, like whenever you said that immediately like kind of
hit you, take you back, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, both, you know, there's only two songs from each band on this album. So it's a 4-song EP. Both songs from each band are actually featured on their next albums. I think Me Without You was Bullet to Binary, and I forget what the other song is. But Norma Jean's two songs that they put on here is I Used to Hate Cell Phones, But Now I Hate Car Accidents.
Yes.
And The Shotgun Message, man.
Yes.
Which both of those songs were early versions which will be re-recorded later on, which brings us to our next album, man. Bless the Martyr, Kiss the Child, released in 2002 from Solid State Records. What was your thought on hearing this album for the first time, Josh?
I'd never really heard anything. Like, you know, the Chariot doesn't exist yet. So, like, I've not really heard anything like this at that point. Like, a lot of those bands that, like, were either kind of in their own genre or in a genre that I wasn't familiar with. I remember, like, all the first bands, you know?
Right.
And this was the first one, kind of like them, like, very chaotic, very underproduced.
There's a deal I read where Scoggins swears that there was no computers used in the making of this album. So I guess it would be all old tapes, maybe. I don't know how they would have done that. But he swears up and down they did not use computers on this album. Which I don't know if that lends to the rawness of it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know how much I believe that, but.
Yeah. All right.
So another question that comes up after you said all that, did you find Norma Jean through the Chariot and Josh Scoggin?
No.
Oh, okay. You kind of made it sound like maybe you heard of Norma Jean through the
Chariot. No, like when I started hanging out with Brandon, that is really when I started getting introduced to all those like Southern metal bands, you know?
Yeah. Shout out to Brandon.
Yeah, like Norma Jean. And it was like, I guess I got into Norma Jean probably like around Redeemer time, because Josh Scoggins had already formed the Chariot.
Right.
So, but yeah, like Norma Jean, the Chariot, Maybelline, Every Time I Die, like all those bands.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be the first full-length album put out under the new name Norma Jean. Josh, did you know that this album is produced by, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher his last name here, but Adam Dunkiewicz, I guess that's how you say it. He's the guitarist from Killswitch Engaged.
No, but I know he does. He does a lot of that, and he's been involved with several bands like
Under Oath's early albums.
I think he produced
They're Only Chasing Safety.
Well, I don't know about that, but I know for sure he did Define the Great Line.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. That's cool. I was thinking for some reason I was thinking Goldman did that one, but
it's at Goldman Studios.
Okay, at his studios, but maybe him. Okay.
Yeah, Adam but he, okay. Yeah, Adam did like a lot of this stuff on there.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So this is going to be the last release with founding member Josh Scoggin on vocals and Josh Doolittle on the bass, only lasted one album. Obviously, as most people know,
this like gets as bad as He Is Legend. Like, when you think about even that, but like the same in and out of the band constantly,
but not even that. I mean, like, think about like the Chariot, how many people have come and gone through that, like album by album by album, is ridiculous. Speaking of the Chariot, as most people know, maybe some of y'all don't, it was at this time that Scoggin left that he ended up forming the Chariot, which was a successful band, I guess you could say. I mean, they were kind of underground, so I mean,
yeah.
Not like radio success or anything like that.
No.
This album is met with high praise, and I think it's safe to say that it may be their most popular album among fans and critics. Would you agree or disagree?
That's a tough call. Okay. I don't know. Well, I think
we can talk about it a little more because there's that statement kind of comes up here in just a little bit. We're going to talk about the two vocalists. So
okay.
we'll talk about the here in just a second. Songs on this album include face, which is a reference to Proverbs 30:15. Obviously, I used to hate cell phones, but now I hate car accidents, which is, I want to stop and say something about that name. It's interesting to me because 2002, you know, obviously the iPhone hasn't been invented. Then maybe there's flip phones out there. I don't know. But it's weird to me that, like, you look at that title now in like 2022 and just is like, wow, it's, how did he know something like that was in 2002 would be so like relevant to like now, you know?
I mean, it's definitely relevant now, but it was relevant then too, because a lot of people resisted like the change to carrying like a mobile phone, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people just like didn't like that or like the thought of that.
Right. That's true. So there's those two songs. And then there's obviously the big hit that everybody loves. And they're always crying for it as an encore at Norma Jean shows. Memphis Will Be Laid to Waste featuring Aaron Weiss of Me Without You. Did you know, Josh, that the music video, have you even seen the music video for this song?
I have. I don't remember exactly.
Did you know that this music video doesn't feature either Josh Scoggin or Josh Doolittle?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was actually made after both of them left. So it's going to feature new vocalist Brad Norris, who joins Norma Jean just as a touring vocalist for 2 years, 2002 to 2004. And it also features new bassist Jake Schultz, who will be on the next several albums. So again, Scoggin's gone, Doolittle's gone. We've already had three band members leave. And now Schultz is on bass. And
we're like just getting started.
Yeah, we're just getting started, people. So yeah. So Norris is your touring vocalist for the next 2 years. And then one,
I think I've seen some Warped Tour videos that like, where he was the touring vocalist. Mm-hmm. He is not good.
No, he's not. He's definitely no Scoggin, and he's definitely no Putman for sure.
Like the ones I saw were really bad. And I know sometimes, you know, on tour, you can have those nights where, you know, you're just like so worn down, like your voice is just shredded. But that did not seem like he ever had it.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe that's probably why he only lasted 2 years and never did an album with them.
Yeah.
They probably just kept him on until they could find somebody else for the time being. So one Corey Putman enters the arena. Putman. He is formerly of the band, I think I'm saying this right, Esso Charis. Charis. Have you ever heard that band before?
No.
Okay, so you never listen to anything, any of their stuff. I would highly recommend going to listen to that, dude. I think it's very raw stuff, but it's pretty good.
What is Corey, does he do guitar or vocals?
He does the guitar and vocals.
Okay.
And there's another guy who does guitar and vocals too. So it's kind of like dueling vocals. But they're both pretty good, man. And I was listening, I had heard it before. I listened to their album several years ago, but then again, going into this deep dive, I went back and listened to some probably about a week ago or so. And, you know, definitely his voice is obviously not what it is now. Very young. But at times you can kind of hear kind of hints of, you know, maybe prime Corey Putman in Norma Jean, you know, maybe like 2010, 2013 era. You can kind of hear that voice a little bit, but it's very raw, much like Throwing Myself album and Bless the Martyr, Kiss the Child. It's pretty good. I'd recommend listening to it though, giving it a shot. Okay, this is where I want to talk about. I'm calling it the Scoggin versus Putman debate. Every time that I go on to YouTube and I go either watch a music video by Norma Jean, lyric video, whatever, there's always at least one person in the comment section that always says, this song sucks. Bless the Martyr, Kiss the Child era was the best. Nothing else matters. Such and such, whatever. And so there seems to be this group of people. I'm not saying it's massive, but there's some group of people out there that have just hung on to Bless the Martyr, Kiss the Child, and Josh Scoggin being the vocalist of Norma Jean, and just said, screw everything else after that. We don't like Putman. We don't like, you know, Oh God, the Aftermath, Redeemer, whatever. We don't like any of that. We just want to stick with Bless the Martyr, and that's it. That's Norma Jean. That is Norma Jean to us and nothing else. You and I have talked about this before, about when, obviously, when you think of Norma Jean, I think you automatically think Corey Putman. You don't really think Scoggin unless you really know the history of it and you've listened to, you know, Throwing Myself and Bless the Martyr, Kiss the Child a lot. And we've both kind of had the talks about, okay, well, who do you really think represents Norma Jean? Is it Corey Putman or is it Josh Scoggin? Who knows what Norma Jean would be if Josh Scoggin wouldn't have left Norma Jean and went to go do the Chariot. If he still was with Norma Jean today, God knows what, you know, they would sound like now.
I feel like they just sound going back to more like the Chariot.
Well, probably so, man. Which probably wouldn't be a bad idea. But then at the same time, then we wouldn't have two good bands, Norma Jean and the Chariot, you know. I don't know. I just kind of feel like there's this group that just is just hanging on for dear life to the Bless the Martyr era. And just they, for some reason, I don't know why, just don't like Corey Putman and his vocals. And I feel like Corey came in and he took them to a new level, to me personally. I think he really, you know, sometimes you can get a new vocalist in a band and it can turn sour. You know, it's just like, ah, this, you know, obviously it doesn't sound the same, but it's just like, it doesn't sound like it's going in a good direction. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I feel like Corey really elevated album after album after album, especially with the growth of his voice. You know, I was thinking the other day, listening to Oh God, the Aftermath, it really sounds like to me, his vocals almost sound like he's cupping the microphone and just kind of like, I don't know, just kind of like cupping it like that and screaming into it. It kind of sounds like, I don't know, it's weird sounding, you know? Did that sound weird when I was doing that?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So don't get me wrong, because I love Oh God, the Aftermath. That's honestly one of my favorite albums by Norma Jean. But I feel like he really kind of hit his stride once he got to Redeemer and then so on and so forth. And so I just feel like nothing against Scoggin, because again, it's like, he's a good vocalist and I like him and Bless the Martyr, Kiss the Child, but I really like the Chariot and I'm glad he went on and did that in 68 also. But I really feel like Norma Jean is Putman's baby, even though, you know, he didn't bear, you know, bear that child. He adopted it basically, you know. What do you think? Yeah.
I just think that that's a really like stupid hill. Like the people who don't like it, you know, like the people who prefer Scoggins and that era, the Bless the Martyr era. Like, I feel like that's a really stupid hill to die on, because you got another band. Okay. Scoggins went and did his own thing with the Chariot, and kind of in the same way that Putman, you know, does everything for Norma Jean. It's kind of like those guys are those bands now, you know, like through all the lineup changes and everything. It's obvious, because that's why the albums continue to sound the same and the style continues to be the same, is because it's all like essentially the product of those one guy, you know, like the, you know, Scoggins or Putman. So
they keep the main thing. And then these new people that come in kind of, you know, add something to it.
Yeah. But I don't understand why you would. Like, so now you're just not going to listen to any of the Norma Jean after that? Because like, even if you don't like, let's say you don't like the newer albums, you know, even like the last few, like you probably still liked Oh God, the Aftermath, and you probably still liked Redeemer.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know.
No, I'm with you too. But I think those are the same people that sit there and they want like they want the new album that comes out in 2022 to sound the exact same as the album that came out in 2005. It's like you can't expect that. You can't expect it to sound the exact same or whatever, because bands change, they mature, there's different trends that come along or whatever, you know. And yeah, it's I'm with you. It's a stupid hill to die on.
Well, and you got the best of both worlds. You got what you wanted. Right. You got the Scoggins band that still sounds like that earlier right. album. And yeah. then you also got Norma Jean, like, to continue on for at least, you know, some people might argue the later ones are not as great, but at least another like 5-6 years of like good albums.
Right, exactly. Plus they went on tour a bunch together. So, you know, that yeah. helps probably. Anyway. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I agree. I think it's a stupid hill to die on. And it's like, if that's what you believe, whatever, but I don't know. And you were sitting there, you were saying, well, maybe they don't listen to the new songs. But it's like, obviously they do, because they're on the comment section right. of the new songs. So I don't know. Yeah. Some people just like to complain though. Anyway. So Corey Putman, he's in the band now. The Corey Putman era of Norma Jean is in full effect. And in 2005, they release his debut album with Norma Jean, Oh God, The Aftermath. And I didn't realize this until I just kind of did some digging on it. There is actually an extended name to this album. Did you know that?
No, I don't think so.
So did you have the album, the CD? I feel yeah. like either you did or I bought. Okay, maybe I just borrowed it from you. So if you took the little lyric booklet in the liner notes, apparently on the first page, there's a longer name than just Oh God, The Aftermath. They sometimes like to call the album Oh God, The Aftermath, The Marvelous End of the Exhausted Contender. And I thought that was pretty cool. It was an interesting kind of name. But that's released from Solid State Records in 2005. Their first album with Corey Putman on vocals and Jake Schultz on bass. Have you ever heard the word portmanteau? Or portmanteau?
Portmanteau?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So the definition of portmanteau is a word blending the sounds and combining the meaning of two others. So the song title, each song title on this album is a portmanteau or portmanteau, whatever. Come at me, literature people. Some of the songs include Bayonet Work, Vultures, and Vivid Colors. So the one on that one is Bayonet and Network combined. So you get what that is? You get it?
Okay.
So it's like, it's basically you're taking two or three words and just like putting them together. It's kind of like they're overlapping each other.
Like all the titles of that album, right?
Right. Yes.
It's Murderotica, Vertebrale.
Yeah. So again, like I said, yeah, Bayonet Work, Liar Cynic, Creating a mm-hmm. Universe of Discourse, which is Liar and Arsenic. You also got the
Disconnect Tie.
Yeah, 10 minute anthem, man. I love this song, Disconnect Tie, The Faithful Vampire.
Yeah,
and that's a good probably one. Yes, and probably my favorite song of all, and probably favorite song, closing song on a Norma Jean album, Scientification, Part One, A Clot of Tragedy, and Part Two, A Swarm of Dedication, which is actually a reference to Jeremiah 51:31. At the very end of that song,
these track lists are like Cohen and Cambria album.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
Good Apollo, I'm Burning Star Four.
Right, yeah, you can definitely tell. It's kind of that age where people were getting pretty crazy with song titles. Not so much anymore, as you can tell from the song titles from this last album are pretty short. Did you know? Two questions for you, Josh. Did you know that there is a hidden track at the beginning of this album?
What?
I'll take that as a no, I didn't know. No. So, do you even know what I mean, like when I say a hidden track at the beginning?
No.
Okay. So, if you had the CD, you put it in, if you hit the reverse button on the first song, it'll go, the album will go into the negatives. There's a 2-minute song at the beginning of Oh God, the Aftermath that is hidden. And it's actually, I believe it's a Nirvana cover, and it's just an instrumental. It's pretty crazy. You can look it up on YouTube. Somebody's put the song up there. Just look up Norma Jean hidden track. Maybe from Oh God, the Aftermath. You'll see the Oh God, the Aftermath logo, and you'll know it's the right one. But from what I could tell from doing some research, it's believed to be a Nirvana cover, instrumental Nirvana cover, from a song that was actually on a Nirvana DVD that was like playing in the background on like the title screen, like the DVD main menu or whatever. pretty crazy. Look at the song though. It's pretty good. It's a nice little instrumental, kind of going crazy there with some feedback and such. Did you also know that there's actually a bonus track on this album?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. It's called Sean Liu. It's actually a pretty good song. You can also look that up on YouTube. Also, just type in Norma Jean Sean Liu. Check it out, man. Third question for you, a little bonus question. I know you like bonus questions.
Is there a hidden track in the middle of the song, in the middle of the album?
No, there's a hidden track within the hidden track.
You hit now, forward and backward at the same time. And
well, you have to do the combo button, forward, backward, backward, play, forward, backward.
Okay.
And then you unlock the hidden song. Now, this album, Josh, actually won Best Recording Package at the Grammys in 2006. Now you may think to yourself, what? Norma Jean won an award from the Grammys? Technically, they didn't win the award. The people who made the artwork won the award. The best recording package is,
yeah,
it's for artwork and a whole album packaging, artwork wise and everything.
I mean, so Norma Jean
didn't technically win. Yeah, it's pretty sick artwork. So that's Oh God, the Aftermath. I do have one complaint real quick. We're talking about hidden tracks. That's one thing I wish, kind of like the splits, that people would bring back. I know that you can still buy CDs from bands, you know, when they have new albums come out and everything, but I wish that they would find a way, especially in 2022 with our technology and everything, I wish they would find a way where if I bought an album if I bought Oh God, the Aftermath off of iTunes, that I would still be able to go find that hidden track within the first song. I've tried and you cannot get to it. And that's one of my biggest complaints, because I always liked buying an album and finding out that it had a hidden song within like the first, you know,
dude, you know, track. What's my favorite hidden track?
What's that?
It's not a Norma Jean song, but it's Once Nothing. And it's How to Build a Sandcastle.
Yeah, How to Build a Sandcastle. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I remember God.
That, man.
Because there's not even a full-length... Is there a full-length version of that song that you can get?
I don't think so.
No. And it sucks because it sounds like it goes so hard.
Yeah, but it does, man. But I think that's the point of having to be a hidden...
You only get, like, what? Like, maybe 10 seconds of it, like, after he actually starts?
Yeah, about 10, 15 seconds, maybe. Yeah, so that's my thought on hidden tracks. Bring back splits and bring back hidden tracks, please, at the beginning of albums. Josh, I hear you went to a Norma Jean concert about this time. Would you tell us a little bit about it?
I remember that it wasn't like I went to the show and that was my exposure to Norma Jean. I remember I went because I liked Norma Jean and I liked the Chariot. And then I didn't know the other two bands that were playing. It was the Handshake Murders and A Life Once Lost, but they were both really good too. And I remember they played, they definitely played some stuff off of Redeemer. I remember that. And then, so there would have been some stuff from Oh God, the Aftermath. But I remember that it must have been the Chariot played before them.
I was thinking it was Norma Jean was the headliner.
Yeah, because I think they headlined that show. And during they played Memphis Will Be Laid to Waste. And when they did, most of the guys from the Chariot like all came out. And it was crazy because it was like the most chaotic thing I've really seen performance-wise at their show so far. Because there were like guys out on the crowd, like, you know, like one of the drummers was out on the crowd, like holding, you know, like a snare,
Or whatever. Yeah.
Just like beating it, you know, out there in the crowd. And then both, Scoggins and,
Putman
were, out there doing vocals, you know, just like dueling vocals.
Right.
It was just, I don't know, it was really chaotic.
Do you remember what the tour name was?
I don't.
Okay. I thought I'd throw it out there, give it a shot.
No. I remember it was at the other side.
Yeah, I can remember you saying that. Right next door, the old Crush Lounge. Yeah. All right, cool, man. If you'd like to hear more Josh concert stories, leave us a review and a comment to let us know.
That'll be definitely one of the tamer ones. That one was like, I went to the show and it was good and I enjoyed it. And then other ones will be like, yeah, man. And then the cops came and they like locked everybody inside the venue. And then other ones will be like, and then I rushed over to the fight, but before I could get there, somebody punched me in the back of the head and knocked me out.
Wow, that's just a little taste for y'all in episodes to come.
Yeah, this is the tamest one you're gonna get.
Which is very interesting because, yeah, I would think for like how crazy both those bands play, like live shows, that there would be like something crazy, like I accidentally got hit in the head by a guitar or something, you know?
No, I don't remember like anything. Like the only things about that show, like I think there was like a fight in the parking lot afterwards, but that was so like minuscule, you know?
It's not a show without a fight, is it?
During a good chunk of the show, I was like right up next to the speakers on the right side of the stage. And so I remember getting home that night, my ears just like ringing so bad because I was just right up on it.
Yeah. Cool. All righty, man. Well, that takes us, as you mentioned, Redeemer, which is released in 2006. From Solid State Records. This is actually going to be the final album with founding member Daniel Davidson on drums. And me personally, I feel like I love Daniel Davidson as a drummer.
Yeah.
I think he's, you know, obviously I think he's great in Norma Jean. I think he was a huge piece to their sound. His drumming style in Norma Jean is very different. I feel like maybe I shouldn't say maybe different, but it's very unique to me. I feel like, you know, I thought he was really good in Every Time I Die when he was with them for a little bit. And even for the one album with Under Oath, I thought he was pretty good too. So I was kind of disappointed after he left. I don't really want to say I didn't like the drums in any other Norma Jean album, but it just kind of felt like it wasn't the same, you know, because he had that unique style.
He's so good.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Was it Low Teens or was it From Parts Unknown that he was on with Every Time I Die?
Was he just on one album or was he on two?
He might have been on two. I mean, those two albums were back to back within a 2-year period.
It was one of those two. I almost want to say Low Teens, but then I'm like, no, I think it's the other one. So I don't remember. I mean, you can look it up real quick if you want. While Josh is doing that, this is actually the first album where one of Corey's brothers, Matthew Putman, contributes additional percussions and drums. We're actually going to see Matthew's name and their other brother, Adam Putman, come up several times in the next several several albums for Norma Jean as they contribute different instruments. I think even at one point, Matthew starts contributing songwriting and producing to several Norma Jean albums. Again, kind of like what I said earlier in the podcast, this album's artwork really drew me in. It's just, it's simple, but it's just weird and interesting. It's a painting of a girl being attacked by, I guess, a crow. I mean, it's a bird, but I think it's a crow, right?
Yeah, it's a crow or a raven.
A raven. I think it's a raven. Now that I think about it, I think it's a raven. It's just very interesting, kind of a weird artwork, especially when you go with the name Redeemer. It's kind of like, I don't see the correlation, but okay. But anyway,
he was on both albums.
Oh, he was on both albums. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking he may have been on both.
Okay. So he would have toured with them from Parts Unknown. And then he wrote and recorded the drums for Low Teens. So okay. And I don't think they put out one in 2017. No, so, they didn't put out an album for like 4 or 5 years.
Okay. So you're saying he was only on one album, Low Teens?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then he toured.
He
toured Parts Unknown.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he didn't write that.
Gotcha. Okay. Back to the album artwork, though. This iconic album artwork was painted by vocalist Shannon Crawford of Cellophane and Monster in the Machine. Have you heard of either one of these bands?
Monster in the Machine sounds familiar.
That's what I was thinking, too. But I really didn't go too deep into that because I had way too much information on Norma Jean to try to figure out.
Right.
But anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Other... Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not going down that rabbit hole. Anyway, this album is met with highly favorable reviews and contains songs like the smash hit intro song, A Grand Scene for a Color Film. Mm. I love the chorus where he talks about breaking out the shotguns and going to town.
Yes.
I always thought that was sick because that was the first song I ever heard from them. It also includes A Small Spark versus A Great Forest Fire, which is referenced to James 3 verses 5 through 12. And also includes Song Sound Much Sadder. Josh, did you know that that song was actually co-written by one Timothy McTague of Under Oath?
I did not.
Yeah, I always thought that was pretty interesting. And then last but not least, The End of All Things will be televised, which just screams the anthem, Josh. Tonight, the South is on fire, which I believe we can both agree at this point, the Corey Putman era of Norma Jean is on fire, much like the song.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, Redeemer is so good. Like, I think I don't want to get ahead of things here, but that one, it's got to be my favorite, you know?
Really?
Like, there's okay. such great, like, tracks on other ones, and from time to time, I've thought that Wrongdoers was my favorite album, but dude, it's definitely Redeemer, because anytime I go back and listen to it, I'm just like, yes, like, this is peak Norma Jean right here. And there's, like, the other albums, like, I love most of their other stuff, but... Yeah, like this is
the one you always come back to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I said earlier, Daniel Davison would be leaving shortly after this album is released. And again, my personal opinion, I feel like it's a huge change to the Norma Jean sound as far as drums and everything. And I feel
this is the Southern Norma Jean album.
Right. Yes. Yeah, for sure. I agree with that. I feel like, though, at one point, but I can't, I've tried looking it up again, but I can't find it. But I feel like I had read where, like, he was, Daniel Davison was in on a lot of, like not just like musical writing, but like lyrics for songs, especially like Oh God, the Aftermath and stuff. But I went back and tried to look for that, but I couldn't find any like true credit where it said, hey, you know, he wrote these songs or whatever. But I feel like I had heard that at one point. Maybe does that sound familiar to you at all?
Not really.
Okay, that's fine. All right, man, let's get into this next album here. 2008 would bring us The Anti-Mother, or otherwise known as Norma Jean versus The Anti-Mother, from Solid State Records. This is actually going to be the first album with new drummer Chris Raines. He's going to be on for this album and the next one. And I thought his drumming was pretty good, but again, it's no Daniel Davison. Nobody's going to be as good as Daniel Davison, I feel like, in Norma Jean.
No, dude, he helped pump out like some of the best albums, like even down the road, like
in other bands.
Low teens after like there had, in my opinion, there's not a bad Every Time I Die album. Kind of the same progression as Norma Jean. You know, if you listen to is it the burial plot or the plot to, it's the very first Every Time I Die album, the burial plot, Bidding War. That's kind of like those first couple unknown albums for Norma Jean, you know, like, eh, like I'm not throwing that album on and listening to it. If I'm throwing on an old Every Time I Die album, it's probably going to be either Hot Damn or Gutter Phenomenon.
Right.
Like even before that though, like Last Night in Town, like that's a good album. Like Hot Damn is a pretty good album, but by the time you get to Gutter Phenomenon, like it's taken off.
Skyrockets.
Yeah. And they're like I was saying, they don't have a bad album in my opinion, but I feel like it starts to get a little stagnant around that point. Like From Parts Unknown was the first Every Time I Die album that I was like, this isn't doing a whole lot for me. Like I still like it, and there's not songs on here that I'm like, oh, this is bad, you know?
Yeah, it just doesn't feel right.
But there just didn't really feel like anything really new brought to it or anything. And then Low Teens comes out and it's like right back to it. It's like going back to Gutter Phenomenon or Big Dirty. Like, yeah. And I think a lot of people think Big Dirty is like their best album, especially like older fans.
Okay.
Yeah, he helps them put out an amazing album there, and you can, you know, his drums are crazy. And then Under Oath, which album was that?
Disambiguation.
Yeah, and that was an amazing album for them. After,
of course, I think too, with like it's between Daniel Davison's drums on Disambiguation and the fact that Spencer really got to take control of everything lyrical, singing, screaming, whatever. I felt like that was really good. No offense to, you know, Gillespie, but it felt like new, something new and a breath of fresh air, even though they didn't, you know, it was only just that one album and they ended up, you know, quitting after that.
Yeah. But, yeah, and especially for them, like, I think it's a lot more noticeable because you went from Define the Great Line to a little bit below that, in my opinion, was
Lost in the Sound of Separation.
Yeah, it's still a really good album, but it's not as good as Define the Great Line.
But that's the thing about it, though, with
Disambiguation, which was like, right. I sometimes I think that album is better than Define the Great Line.
Really?
Yeah, like sometimes I listen through to it, like there's like such a solid connection between a lot of those songs. Like,
right.
I don't know. I'm a sucker for an album that's recorded a certain way to be listened to that way.
Yeah. You know, the good transitions like, from song to song and yeah, such.
Not
yeah,
like
I agree.
We move tracks around because the label thought this track would be better at the beginning. It's like, no, this is all written one way, and that's the only way it can be listened to.
Well, your album's supposed to tell a story, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the main focus of your album. Yeah. I don't know. I was going to say, though, we're getting way off from Norma Jean here, but
I just
wanted to say about the whole Define the Great Line thing, and what you said about Lost in the Sound of Separation. That's so hard, though, to follow up an album like Define the Great Line. That's almost like impossible.
Yeah.
with how good it was, you know. But yeah, it was a good album either way. Where were we at with Norma Jean here? Oh yeah, see here.
We're talking about Daniel Davidson and the writer's credits and stuff.
Yes. Again, like I said, this is gonna be the first album, Anti-Mother, with new drummer Chris Raines. And that's where we kind of got off topic because we were talking about Daniel again. We gotta let go of Daniel, man. We gotta let him go.
This is the Daniel Davidson podcast.
Maybe we'll have a full episode of Daniel Davidson. Might have to do something like
that. It's gonna be shorter than you think. He's only in like Norma Jean,
Under Oath, Every Time I Die.
Every Time I Die. And then there's like the Color Revolt. Color Revolt.
Okay. And then I think there's one more thing. But I think what with him especially, here we go again, getting off the topic of Norma Jean. But with Daniel Davidson, he's done a lot of work of like music videos. He's a big artsy guy. He's done some other stuff. He's probably
credited with a lot more stuff. You know, he might be like a writing partner for a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's might true. Produce.
Yeah, yeah true. Okay, anyway, back to Anti-Mother. We're staying on topic here, people, with Norma Jean, okay?
We got to get through Anti-Mother.
We got to get through Anti-Mother. Okay, anyway, Chris Raines, new drummer, Daniel Davidson gone. Don't talk about him anymore. So frontman Corey Putman described the Anti-Mother as a character we created which represents anything that is deceptive and yet possesses an outwardly beautiful nature. And this album was met with mostly favorable reviews. It's funny though, because in doing this research, I found one article that was like probably the most negative album review I've ever read. It flat out stated in plain English, no one needs to ever listen to this album for any reason ever. And I thought, wow, that's pretty harsh. Now I will say the first time I ever heard this album, I thought, I don't know if I really like this. And I think, again, that kind of goes back to what we're talking about with Define the Great Line, transitioning into Lost in Sound of Separation. Redeemer's, I mean, that's setting the bar way high, man. And then to lose your drummer on top of that, that helped you make you who you are. That's a tough, you know, call to answer there. And so my first, you know, listening to Anti-Mother again, I was like, yeah, not really good. In years later, I think especially once Wrongdoers came out, I kind of went back and listened to, I think it was Anti-Mother and Meridional. Those two albums I really wasn't big on when they first came out. But once Wrongdoers came out and I really kind of got back into Norma Jean again, I went back and listened to those two albums. And I love both of them. Again, though, they're not as good as something like Redeemer. What do you think?
Anti-Mother is definitely one of their weaker albums.
It's definitely like, it feels kind of like an experimental album, kind of like they're really trying to find like a new sound, you know, after losing another founding member, because this album features a lot of not guest vocal spots or guest guitar spots or anything like that, but a lot of collaborations with different artists. So these artists came in and actually wrote some of these songs with Norma Jean. So you're not really just getting Norma Jean sound, you're getting Norma Jean plus, you know, whoever's coming in. So like Chino Moreno from Deftones came in and helped write some songs. Cove Reber from Seosin came in and helped write some songs. Paige Hamilton from Helmet came in and wrote a couple of songs with them. So that kind of adds to like the, I don't want to say weirdness, but like different sound of the album, I guess, than what we're normally used to, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's definitely got some good tracks on it. It's got some confusing tracks on it.
Very true.
But it also has one of my favorite Norma Jean songs, like one of my most listened to songs, and that's What's Self-Employed that? Chemist.
Okay. Love that song. It's a good one. Yeah. So the songs include, like you said, Self-Employed Chemist, Robots 3, Human Zero, Surrender Your Sons, featuring Cove Reber of Seosin. Vipers, Snakes, and Actors, which I think is a just top-notch intro song to an album, I thought. Me personally. And then one of my favorite songs to end a Norma Jean album, and There Will Be a Swarm of Hornets, which features a lot of different people on it. Almost like everybody who ever added anything to this album came in on this song, especially in like the gang vocal parts or whatever. And there's more people than just the three names that I mentioned. There's a, I think there's like three or four girls that came in. I've never even heard of them, but they came in and helped write some songs too. So it's definitely, you know, kind of an experimental album, definitely off the beaten path that was Norma Jean, you know, that we know of. Still a good album, but you know, I agree with you. It's definitely not their best for sure. Maybe their least best. They're, I don't want to say worst, because I don't know if there's a worst album that they have, you know.
Yeah. It's just a weaker one.
Yeah. Weaker. That's a good word to use. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I think we're actually gonna stop right there. We have realized that we're already like probably close to 2 hours in, and we haven't even made it through like half of their albums yet. And there's so much more to come. So we're going to go ahead and end it here. This will be part one of the Norma Jean episode of the History of the Chorus podcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at @isservedbypro. That's where you're going to find all the news and episode postings for not just this podcast, but our other two podcasts as well. The Red Right Hand podcast, which covers the Peaky Blinders show, and our newest one coming out here soon, House of the Dragon podcast, which, as you can guess, covers the House of the Dragon show off of HBO, which will be starting here pretty soon. Make sure to tell us what you think of the show by leaving us a review and a comment on whatever podcast service you are listening to, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, so on and so forth. Also, almost forgot, make sure to follow this guy on Twitter also, at Joshua Lynn Gary. Yeah, I think that's it. Anything else? Do you want to plug the Twitch, or are we giving up on that?
We're going to give up for now.
We're just continue, people.
Yeah, we're just not going to talk about it until it's happening.
Talk about what?
Exactly.
Alrighty. Well, that's going to do it, man. We will catch you in the next episode, part two of Norma Jean. See ya.
Bye.